Commissioner. What a great story, John. Let's talk again soon. David in Gravesend, you happy to wait till after the 2 o'clock news, David?
Yes.
Thank you. It'll be good to speak to you. I look forward to it in a moment or two. 08085909693 is a number to call if you'd like to have Vanetta on the nightclub.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 2 o'clock. This is Charlotte Simpson. President Biden has said the United States will do everything in its power to prevent an escalation of conflict in the Middle East. Cross-border exchanges of fire between the Iranian-backed Hezbollah group in Lebanon and the Israeli military have intensified. Benjamin Netanyahu has warned Hezbollah faces more attacks unless it backs down. Speaking at a UN summit, the Israeli ambassador, Danny Dannon, insisted that Israel wanted to avoid a wider conflict.
Let me be clear. We are a peaceful nation. We do not seek war, nor do we desire it. However, we will not stand by as our people are attacked. We will use all means at hand, our determination, our innovation, and our strength to protect our people.
In a speech at the Labour Party conference, the Chancellor will promise a budget to rebuild Britain as the party comes under scrutiny on the issue of donations, including holidays and clothing. The Prime Minister has said that senior ministers will not accept gifts of clothes in the future. Baroness Hodge, who was a Labour MP for nearly 30 years, says the issue has become a distraction.
I know Keir well. He's not a Boris Johnson. He's not somebody who acts with impunity. And I think he will be as devastated as everybody else that this went wrong. But they've stopped it. And I think this is the moment that we bring forward really, really clear, strong proposals to clean up politics, to set the rules, to ensure they're properly enforced and to ensure proper accountability to the public.
New figures show fuel prices are falling faster than at any other point in 2024 so far, with the average price for petrol and diesel across forecourts nearly 7p per litre cheaper than a month ago. The drop in price, which now stands at the lowest level in almost 3 years, is being attributed to a fall in oil prices and the strength of the pound against the US dollar. Sri Lanka's presidential election has been won by the left-wing opposition candidate, Anura Kumara Dasianika. The poll, which went to a second count for the first time in Sri Lanka's history, was described as one of the country's closest. He's promised voters tough anti-corruption measures and to revive the economy. Samir Hussain is in Colombo.
It's a complete shift away from the political dynasty of the Rajapaksas that have really dominated politics in this country for decades. So he really positioned himself as a candidate for change, and that really came to fruition. It was not the usual ethnic and religious tensions that brought people to vote this time around. It really had everything to do with the economy.
Liam Gallagher has hit back after receiving criticism online of his performance at Wembley Stadium last night. He played ahead of the boxing match between Anthony Joshua and Daniel Dubois. The singer claimed his voice had been angelic and called those who since joked about selling their tickets for the Oasis reunion tour imposters. BBC News, it's 2 minutes past 2.
I'm Matt Shawley coming to you live from Westminster, Monday to Friday from 2 o'clock.
Order!
We are looking for a member of Matt's Parliament for New Forest East. Mick has got a claim. Hello, Mick.
In 1997, I proposed in a little hotel in Brockenhurst.
When you went down on one knee in the New Forest, it wasn't outside, was it?
It was actually in the bathroom.
What?
We were getting ready for dinner and I wanted it all to be sort of sorted before we went in and celebrated.
So you could just really concentrate on the meal without the distraction?
Yeah.
I still wonder about this feature sometimes.
Matt Shawley.
Monday to Friday from 2
on BBC Radio 5 Live.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
This is our wee part of the United Kingdom.
Live from here at Old Trafford.
I think it needs a massive overhaul.
Dalton Adebayo. Listen on BBC Science.
What are we talking about? Yeah, we're talking about dancing tonight on the nightclub. Because Strictly's back, yeah. Are you ready to do your Fandango? I'm glad, because I'm not.
Here comes my happiness again.
That's right.
Right back to where it should have been. Cause now she's gone and I am free.
So, if you can jitterbug, if you can do the jive, if you can do the bop, if you can do that, do you know Willie and the hand jive? Do you know the hand jive? Yeah, if you can. Or if you can do the two-step, yeah. If you can do the shuffle, if you can do the twist, if you can do the water pumpy, any of you can do the water pumpy? It's a dance, you know.
As you can tell.
That's right. I'll take some waltzes, if you fancy. So where's my two-step crew then? Let's show people how to really dance, shall we? Yeah? That's what I want to do tonight. I want to dance the night away with you. If you've been influenced by the success of Strictly to take up dancing, then talk to me. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and if you can do the bogle, do you remember that? Murder, she wrought. Yeah, that one. Teach me. How'd you do your bogle? 0808 590 9693. Well, as well as that, we're looking for advice to the Prime Minister, who needs to dig himself out of some of a row that is brewing at the Labour Party conference in Liverpool. He wants to talk principles when he gets up on the stage, or policies rather than principles. Sorry, principles was Archie and Vanessa's take on this. But he wants to talk policy when he gets up on stage at the Labour Party conference in Liverpool, and everybody else wants to talk freebies and winter fuel payments. How does he get himself out of a hole like that? 0808 590 9693. Or as Archie and Inverness were suggesting, how did he get himself into a hole like that? You know what I mean? 0808 590 9693. And also we're asking for your big reunions. If you've stumbled upon somebody that you haven't seen for a while, whether it be directly, in person, by phone, by letter, by text and email, and all the other ways of getting in contact nowadays, what was it like? Who was it that you had a reunion with? Was it an office reunion, maybe? Was it a school reunion? Was it just a personal reunion? You tell me. Could even be a family reunion, you know. We're taking all kinds of reunions tonight. I had one myself earlier on this evening, and I want to share that love with you. And you feel free to share your love with me. And also, pinch yourself moments, moments when you had to pinch yourself to make sure you weren't dreaming about your circumstances, where you were and that kind of thing, who you met and that sort of thing. You tell me, what's the story, Morning Glory? 0808 590 9693, or as we prefer to say, what's the story about Lamori? Wouldn't you like to know? David in Gravesend, hello.
Hello, Gordon.
Hello, how are you, mate?
How did I? That is a funny voice. I'll do it back. There's a disturbance in the board, my lord.
That's not bad. You got the job. You got the job.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're most welcome. And you've got some advice for the Prime Minister and all. You can do it in that voice.
No, Tony Blair. He needs to get himself out of this very quick.
Yeah.
Because basically, things are looking a mess, not just in this country, across the world and all.
Yeah,
he needs to come up with to talk defence policy, housing policy, sort out the winter fuel payments, aiming to fork out the building up the country. Mm-hmm. He also needs to make sure that he does not give too much carbon blanche about storm shadow missiles to Ukraine, unless he's got a plan to back up to support it. Now let's go back to the conference. Basically on the clothing thing, donations, all the else, It basically he should have really watched his back on that one from the start,
because
I'm surprised that the services are not kicking out a nice little stink about
Got problems of their own, haven't they? They're trying to choose a leader. They haven't got time to be kicking up a stink about that. In fact, they don't need to because Sir Keir Starmer is doing all the work for them, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah.
And that's not it. That's not it. It's three of them. And so basically, you don't sue Griner pay grade. Mm-hmm. It makes it look a very big embarrassment, given the fact that they've only been in government 3 or 4 months.
But why is the sue grade earning more money than the Prime Minister? A scandal.
I don't know.
I don't know
I
why
think that is just bang out of order.
Well, I look at it as being somewhat misogynistic. Why shouldn't a woman be earning more than the Prime Minister? Is that what they're trying to say? And why should the Prime Minister earn more than somebody who's got more experience than him in the job that she's doing?
Yeah, she probably has. But then again, what experience has he actually got? He's no Tony Blair.
I just
starting to cringe what his next move is and what he's going to drag this country into, Don. Not being rude.
Yeah,
I mean, I know Tony Blair made a ball jut in 97 about the Saddam Hussein and the dodgy dossier.
Yeah,
but he doesn't want to make the same mistakes and get himself into a situation where he's not going to get out of it.
Yeah.
That's where our foreign affairs policy has collapsed a bit. After that, after David Cameron in 2030, he couldn't get the vote in the House of Commons, where Barack Obama had his red lines about Syria, and he couldn't get it through. That's gave Russia the mandate to do what they want to do now. That's given Israel the free hand, and that's where we're getting to where we are now, because there's been a loose cannon.
Yeah, you see, you can say all those things, and all we're interested in is winter fuel payments and free tickets to go and see the Arsenal. Sorry, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I know, and that's what really gets my, that's really grots my cheese a bit about this, Don. It's all about silly things like free football tickets to the Arsenal. And
would you have taken them? Would you have taken those tickets? Would you?
I wouldn't.
Right, hang on, before you say no, you wouldn't, this is tickets in the corporate box. They're worth thousands of pounds. You get a free meal out of it. You get a little bit of champagne or whatever you want to drink out of it and all. Are you honestly saying that you wouldn't have taken it?
No, I wouldn't.
If it saved the taxpayer more money by you taking those tickets, if you were the Prime Minister, you needed a certain amount of security with you, but if you want to go and see your favourite team, the Arsenal, and sit in the stands, we're going to need, you know, however many security guards around you. It's actually cheaper, the Prime Minister was arguing, for him to go and take the freebies in the director's box, because then you wouldn't need as many security personnel around you. Wouldn't you have taken it? Under those circumstances, would you, if you were Prime Minister, would you have taken it if it was cheaper than ensuring that you had all the security you needed in the stands? Would you have taken it?
No, I wouldn't, because see why? He's the Prime Minister. He's got to go see Arsenal, and yet he should be running the country. He's the Prime Minister. He should be on alert 24 hours a day. He should be available 24 hours a day, whatever's going to blow him up. Not watching some silly boys' club kick a football around. I'm sorry, that's another problem I have a gripe with it. That is him not being available if something really went wrong.
Mate, you're not the only one who's got a gripe with it, you know. Get to the back of the queue in respect of that. David, absolute pleasure to speak to you, as it always is. We've got Gene with us in Ely in Cambridgeshire, and we've got Phil with us in Loughborough. Bear with me, Phil. Gene, first of all, hello.
Hello.
We'll meet again. Don't know where.
Again.
But I know. No, I didn't mean in terms of it's you again. You can come up and talk to me any time you like. But in terms of reunions, is that not the song that you sing when you meet somebody that you haven't seen? And, you know, you're about to say goodbye. We'll meet again. Yeah, indeed. The late, Vera Lynn, of course. So let's talk about the reunion that you enjoyed.
Yes, it's my friend. Oh, she was my friend at college, when we went to college together in Blackpool.
How many years
and
ago was that?
She stayed in Blackpool working, and I moved to Leeds. And we lost touch. And I went to Blackpool last September with my carer.
Yeah.
And I said to him, I think I'll see if I can get in touch with her, if she still around here, because I knew what her married name was. So I rang her and she didn't pick up the phone to start with because she didn't recognise the number.
How did you get her number?
I rang her again later on, and we had a long chat and caught up with all the information.
How did you get her number? How did you get her number? How did you manage to trace her number down?
It was in the telephone directory.
Do they still have telephone directories there in Blackpool? Yeah. They've still got old-fashioned telephone directories.
Yeah, we have at our house.
What, one of those big volumes of books with lots and lots of thin pages?
Volumes, then, are they half the size now?
Yeah, of course they are, because people don't have that many phones, or landline phones anymore.
But she was in there under her own name.
Wow, that was lucky. That was a stroke of luck, wasn't it? And when you finally, when she finally picked up, what did you say? What did you say?
When did she finally pick up?
Yeah, when she finally picked up the phone, because you said she didn't answer initially because she didn't recognise the number.
No.
And
she didn't pick it up originally.
And then she picked up the phone.
She didn't recognise the number.
But then she, when she picked up the phone.
I rang her in the daytime, because that was the night time I rang her.
You don't want to ring somebody in the night.
I rang her in the daytime and she answered the phone.
The only person you're allowed to ring at night time is me. But apart from me, yeah, you don't want to ring people in the night time when they don't recognise your number. But what did you say? How did you say hello? Hello, baby.
Her name was Anita.
Anita, OK.
And she always used to say, but you could call me Knee Tips.
Knee Tips?
Knee Tips, yeah.
OK.
So I said, is that Knee Tips? She said, yes. I said, well, there's Jean here. And
did she remember
Jean.
You?
I said, yes. I said, Hargreaves. And she said, oh, heck. She said, how are you? I said, I'm not too bad. I said, I've got Parkinson's, but I'm okay with it. And,
did you just only speak to her on the phone, or did you get to meet her as well?
No, I haven't met her yet. I'm going to meet her this year,
You're going back to Blackpool?
Go back to Blackpool.
Oh, that is so sweet. That is so sweet. Was it the same as it was when you last saw her?
Yeah.
It was.
It sounded different.
So, despite the Parkinson's, you haven't changed either, have you?
No.
So do you think you will be able to rekindle that friendship?
Yeah.
Will you tell me all about it when you do?
Yes, I will.
What an absolutely brilliant story, Jean. Thank you very much for sharing it with us. Jean in Ely. We've got Phil in Loughborough in Leicestershire. Hello, Phil. How are you?
Yes, hello. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning to you. Okay, you were 14 years old and...
That's right, 1965.
Yes. What happened?
I had a chance to visit the Isle of Man TT races. A friend was going and he invited me along. Now, I'd never been to a motorcycle race meeting before and I knew nothing about it, but I did have an interest in motorcycles since I was about 12. I found myself visiting the TT races and... on the Monday morning at 11 o'clock, the sidecar race took place, and I found myself right out towards the end of the first lap at a bend known as Hilbury. And this is a very fast, sweeping right-hand bend, and I was watching the racing from there. And when they came into view, there was an eerie silence before... you saw anything at all. Only the Manx radio was on at the time, which incidentally was the first UK local radio station. And then after that became, 3 years later, BBC Radio Leicester. But I digress. That's
No, that's no digression. That's an important part of history right there. So I'm glad you...
Yes, it was.
You brought it in. Yeah, so...
And anyway, The big stars of the day were West German and Swiss drivers with their respected passengers, and I could not believe the speed they were going at. It was absolutely awesome. We took the Bend of Hillbury at a fantastic speed, with the acrobatics of the passengers very impressive, as well as the skills of the driver and that.
Oh,
I thought,
so
well, this is really something to watch. It's a wonderful sporting spectacle. Murray Walker, the great Formula One commentator,
of course,
has always said that the Isle of Man TT race is the greatest motorsport event in the world. And,
well,
and I do believe that, always have done.
It's on the open road. That's what, you know,
yes,
for those who don't know, it's on the open road. They shut down the roads on the Isle of Man for these races. And it's kind of it's like why people love the Monaco Grand Prix. You know, it's the only
Grand Prix
that goes through the... I've driven that Monaco Grand Prix circuit.
On the circuit.
Not when it was Grand Prix, obviously, just when there was normal traffic. But you got to go, you got to do it, haven't you? And I've gone through all the tunnels that they've gone through. I've done the whole circuit. For a TT race, though, you mentioned that because it's a sidecar race, and the sidecars, I imagine, aren't the sidecars that you would see on the road, because you were saying that the acrobatics of the passengers, what did you mean? Are they having to lean to one side? Because,
the conventional left-sided sidecar, the passengers are over the back wheel, trying to keep it on the floor as best they can. And the wrong way round, German outfits and Swiss outfits and the likes, their sidecars are the other way, so they're hanging right off the side of the outfit to control it.
Oh, so you brought your sidecars with you, whether they adhere to our road usage or not.
That's right.
The thing maybe I should just describe as well, Phil, and tell me if I'm right in this, because on a motorcycle, for those who have ridden motorcycles, when you go round bends, your pillion passengers have got to lean into the bend, because their instinct is if they lean into the bend, you're going to go over. But actually, that's the way to balance a motorcycle, rather than lean away from the bend, if you know what I mean.
Well, that's good advice, I feel. The best advice I ever had was, if you're ever a pillion passenger on a bike, be a sack of potatoes. Just simply sit there and let the bike do the work.
Yeah.
Let the driver and the rider and the bike do the work. So you just lean with the bend as it goes. But you certainly don't fight against it. You can cause a nasty accident that way.
Of course you could. And I'm not trying to be funny, but the advice that I gave, it was the only pillion passengers I ever took were women, you know. And, well, what can I say? My advice to them was just hang tightly around my waist.
That's it. That's the best thing, I think.
Well, not for you. Not you. I don't mean you.
No, not
Phil,
me.
I'm only joking.
Anyway, moving on.
Moving on, yeah, indeed.
Little did I think that 3 years 3 years later, I would become a racing sidecar passenger myself. And I quickly, in the first year, we managed to gain an international license. And by 1970, I found myself standing on the start line of the TT races itself for the 1970 event. So that was a pinch yourself moment, if you like.
That was just 5 years later.
Yes, I was just 19 then.
Oh, my goodness. So you must have loved this sport then. You must have really
certainly
loved
did.
This
I took
sport.
To it straight away. As soon as I was so impressed with that first view that I ever saw. And I had an opportunity to do the 1970. There was two races then. One for 750 machines, 750cc, and one for 500cc machines. And, of course, one of the events counted towards the World Championship as well. So,
The pinch-yourself moment, you're saying, was when the 1970 taking part, rather than the 1965, which I thought was going to be your pinch-yourself moment, because, you know, when you see it for the first time, it's unbelievable. Like you say, it's so
I think both events were striking in my mind. I remember them so vividly.
Mm-hmm. Why haven't you told me about this before, Phil?
I don't know. I don't suppose it's ever come up before in terms of pinch yourself moments. Can't remember that being a feature of your show before.
Sure. Well, maybe we should do it more often. It's a brilliant story. Ever thought of putting it down on paper so that we can make a film out of it?
Well, you know, one or two people have said that. They said that my memory is so strong on certain things, dates and sporting events that I've seen and that I could, well, one or two have actually said you should write a book, but maybe that's stretching it a bit.
Well, no, it's not stretching it at all. I tell you what, there are enough people who would love to read your story and, you know, I'm sure there's a market for it, but if it's whether you're prepared to put yourself, you know, to spend the time that it does need a little bit of time writing a great story.
Can I just say incidentally that the first race I entered was there was 98 entrants in that race. Seems unbelievable now. 98. I think 87. I think started the actual race. 87 sidecar outfits. And we were number 89 of those 87.
Yeah. So you didn't come first, basically, is what you're trying to say.
No,
you
didn't come first, but considering it was our first ever race, we were lying 17th with just 3 miles to go out of 113 miles. We'd covered 110, lying in 17th place. And our fuel tank split and we ran out of fuel. So we pushed the sidecar outfit the last about something like a mile and a half getting on for.
No way.
So we did actually finish the race.
You pushed it all that way. Oh, my goodness. I'm impressed. Phil, thank you for telling us all about it. Phil in Loughborough there. We've got Rashid with us in Chesham. Hello, Rashid.
Hello, Gordon. Yes, how are you? Good?
Very well, thanks very much. You got advice from the Prime Minister?
Yes, I have, yes.
Really? Go on, then.
A few things you might want to learn from past history. And also, yeah, what he should be making or saying when he delivers his speech to the party conference.
Okay, let's do the history first. Let's go for the history first, yeah.
Well, number one, if he's listening, he probably won't be Dutton.
I think he will be.
I would advise him to sack Miss Gray.
Well, he's not going to listen to that. I mean, he was listening. Now we've lost him.
Yes. Well, the history being, Don, look, what he should do is he should have proper, what they used to call SPADs, or Special Advisors.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I don't know if they still exist.
They still exist. SPADs still
exist. Or he should be setting up some sort of independent think tank, you know, with people around him who can advise him properly, let's say.
He hasn't got time for that. What he's got time for? He needs...
But the history, I mention names other than her, obviously, if you think back to Tony Blair's time, mm-hmm. Peter Mandelson.
Well, yeah, although Peter Mandelson played another role in the government.
I know he had a government role to begin with, but he did come back as a government advisor, and he was quite influential during period of the Tony Blair government.
But he wasn't the chief of staff, though, was he? He wasn't the chief of staff. Do you know what I mean? Because Sue Gray is the chief of staff. She's not just a government advisor. She's the chief of staff. She's the person controlling everything, and not least the prime minister's timetable and the direction of policy and everything else.
Yeah.
He's in charge, like he said.
Another one I could mention of the more recent past is a certain Mr. Dominic Cummings.
Yes, yes.
So that's where I'm coming from, that angle.
I see what you did there.
Don't forget, Don.
I'm coming for Cummings, you know what I mean?
Don't forget that, obviously, I don't know if she's writing everything down, or what's being said, or if she's partial to cabinet meetings. Obviously, if everything did go wrong between them, she could potentially put the knife in the current Prime Minister's back, so to speak, if she had an axe to grind.
Well, but, she's...
I wanted to talk about.
Well, he's not going to sack her. He's not going to sack her. But hey, let's talk about the other side of things.
Yeah, also, I think the speech itself, he's going to have to give the speech of his life.
Really?
Why? I think after all the recent controversies which we've already talked about, obviously not learning from past events. Yeah, he's got to come through being with the speech, some sort of sincerity coming through, like he really means it, not just, you know, for the sake of it. And there's got to be some honesty in there as well. Even if sometimes you have to be a bit brutal sometimes about things, right? You have to let people know what's exactly happening, what the situation is with what the current government are trying to do and where they are coming from, so to speak. And I think he also needs to show more of a charismatic side. We haven't had a prime minister like that in a, well, Boris, I suppose, had a little bit of it more. So he needs to show some of that, basically. And, yeah, and trying to basically regain the trust of the public. So.
Yeah, I think everything you're saying makes sound sense. He could just say, I'm sorry. You know, he could say, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to withdraw the winter fuel payments, and I didn't mean to upset everybody by taking tickets to go and see Arsenal, and my wife didn't mean to upset anybody by taking freebies on clothes, etc. He could just say, I'm so sorry, stand up, steps, ta-na. He could, couldn't he? But I suppose prime ministers do not find it easy to say, I'm so sorry. I made a mistake. It was a momentous cock-up. I balls things up. Rashid, thank you very much. Appreciate that. And more, please. More advice from the Prime Minister. 2:31.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News on 5 Live. President Biden says the United States will do everything in its power to prevent an escalation of conflict in the Middle East. Cross-border exchanges of fire between the Iranian-backed Hezbollah group in Lebanon and the Israeli military have intensified. Benjamin Netanyahu has warned Hezbollah it faces more attacks unless it backs down. In a speech at the Labour Party conference, the Chancellor will promise a budget to rebuild Britain as the party comes under scrutiny on the issue of donations, including holidays and clothing. The Prime Minister says that senior ministers will not accept gifts of clothes in the future. And new figures show fuel prices are falling faster than at any other point in 2024 so far. The drop in prices being attributed to a fall in oil prices and the strength of the pound against the US dollar. 5 Live Sport now, here's Andy Barwell.
Manchester City moved back to the top of the Premier League table, but their perfect record isn't intact anymore. It followed a pulsating 2-2 draw with their title rivals Arsenal, who remain unbeaten. After Leandro Trossard's sending off in first half stoppage time, some resolute defending looked like claiming Arsenal the victory at the Etihad Stadium, only for John Stones to get the City equaliser in the 98th minute. Let's hear now from the two bosses in a moment, Mikel Arteta, but first Pep Guardiola.
It's better than defeat. I would prefer to win. We start really well. Many things happen in the game. Many, many things happen in the game. But, yeah, we handle it good. And at the end, we can rescue a point.
We did a lot of things good. But it's very difficult. It's an accident waiting to happen. You play the best team in the world for 56 minutes with 10 men, which doesn't allow you to put any pressure on the ball, doesn't allow you to get out from your own box, and they don't lose the ball. So they lose it inside the six-yard box, which means that there's no option either to run. So very complicated, but again, for this place to be that humble and that disciplined and show that competitiveness is just incredible.
Brighton drew 2-2 with Nottingham Forest. Both managers there were sent off late on in the game, along with the Forest player Morgan Gibbs-White. After Celtic's 5-2 victory over Falkirk in the Scottish League Cup, the Old Firm have been kept apart in the semi-finals. Celtic will take on Aberdeen, Motherwell will play Rangers. Vivian Miedema scored one goal and made another on her return to the Emirates Stadium. Manchester City drew 2-2 with their former club Arsenal in their Women's Super League opener. And Celtic beat their Ukrainian opponents 1-0 in the first leg of the Women's Champions League qualifier. The return is on Thursday, with the winner going through to the group stages. After the victory for McLaren's Lando Norris in the Singapore Grand Prix, Max Verstappen's lead in the F1 Drivers' Championship is down to 52 points with six races to go. The American Billy Horschel claimed the European Tour's PGA Championship title at Wentworth for the second time in 4 years. And they'll try again at Trent Bridge today for cricket's 50-over one-day cup final, with Somerset facing Glamorgan.
On Radio 4, the more you listen, the more you see.
We're living under more tyranny today than our founding fathers did in 1775.
A US presidential election is looming, but underneath, conspiracy culture rears its head once again. And nothing is as it seems.
All those things that we had feared our whole lives was coming true.
Burn the house down and start over. That seems to be the way.
It's America through the looking glass. Join me, Gabriel Gatehouse, as The Coming Storm continues. Listen on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker to play BBC Radio 5 Live. Dotun Adebayo. BBC Radio 5 Live.
Yeah, Mark in Birmingham has sent me an email saying, I organised a reunion around summer 2013 with folk I used to work for in the 1990s. Well, to my delight, over 50 people turned up. People had obviously moved on with their lives, and I was talking with a good friend's wife, who was a vet and a big cat lover, about my cat, who I buried under a washing post befitting the, I thought, as I won't forget where she's buried. Well, if looks could kill, he says, until I told her the cat was dead. When I buried her, and how I thought it was very befitting. So you've got to be careful. You can't just go to a reunion and then start telling half of the story, because people are going to draw their own conclusions, mate. And Thomas says, with advice to the Prime Minister, which we're asking for this morning as well, Thomas says the Prime Minister is talking about a 10-year plan, and... Oh, I think we should put our money on a hung parliament next time around. You know, he tries to be a smart, what's it? Can you say that on radio? Or I know you can say backside, but I was wondering if you could say what you just put. He's trying to be a smart, yeah. Anyway, but he kept getting caught out time and time again. So, yeah. Well, thank you for that, Thomas. I think I know what you're talking about there. I might have missed a comma or two in trying to sum it up. And this one, oh, I know all about this one, because it's about your absolute, your dub Reggie. Our listener says, first time in the early 70s when I was still at school and I heard Tago Mago or Tago Margo by Can and Ital Dub. Yeah, that's definitely Ital, because Ital is vital, as the Rasta men used to say, by Johnny Osborne and the late, I suppose, it was his name, Oliver Ruddock, King Tubby. It was certainly Ruddock. Oh, I can't remember what his first name was. Anyway, King Tubby. I had to pinch myself, Dawson. Two different types of music away from the mainstream glam rock at the time. It had a massive impact on my taste in non-pop music before punk. By 1977, when I left school, I realised that punk and reggae and dub and bands like Can and Kraftwerk were all related to my taste, and Top of the Pops was cheesy trash. Well, you went on a journey, mate, musical journey, and it ends up with Top of the Pops being cheesy trash. I think we all went on that journey, but maybe it wasn't as cheesy as we thought on reflection, but hey, who am I to argue? So we're looking for your pinch yourself moments, the moment you had to pinch yourself to make sure you weren't dreaming, that this was really happening. We've heard some good stories about that tonight. What about yours? What's your pinch yourself moment? 08085 909693. Also looking for your grand reunions, the grand reunion, whether it was a reunion, school reunion, work reunion, family reunion, or just ordinary person-to-person reunions. You know, those are the best ones, aren't they? When you haven't seen somebody for a long time. I bumped into this guy. When I was at the National Youth Theatre, this guy, great actor, by the way, Paul Blackman. and he was in, what was he in? Oh gosh, was it Good Lads at Heart? I think it was Good Lads at Heart, wasn't it? A Peter Turson play. I hadn't seen him for probably 30 something years, and I just bumped into him on the street in Greenwich by the Naval College when I was like showing our French friends, you know, how great Britain was once upon a time. And he literally comes out and he says, look, I've been living in New York. And by the way, here are my two sons. And I couldn't help. I know you're going to think this is racist. I know you're going to think this is racist. You know me. I don't have a racist bone in my body, but I know you're going to say, oh, that was really racist. But his two sons were black. And, you know, he was a white guy. And I thought, that's quite appropriate. You know, I've found that comforting to know that my mate, Paul Blackman, you know, his two sons are black. Is that racist? I mean, genuinely, I was like, yeah, right. Okay. I didn't say it to him directly, but I was thinking in my head, oh, you got two sons who are black. Oh, wicked. You know, it's positive. I wasn't, go on. Tell me that was racist. Go on. Honestly, I swear, I didn't even have that in my mind. But it was interesting, wasn't it? You know what I mean? It's like, I've got this mate in New York. Okay. My mate in New York, I promise you, he is, dare I say, no, I can't say as black as the midnight sky. He's very dark skinned. He's very dark skinned and his name is Willie White. That's a true story. He's a drummer. That is a true story. I don't know why I find that amusing. You know, sometimes it's jokes, isn't it? It's like, my name's Dotton. And you're like, well, Dotton, you get me? It's not racist. It's just like, Dotton. Do you get me? Yeah, that's it. So I dug myself out of that one. We've got David in Hitchin, who can dig me out of it even more so. Imagine me being in the same hole as Keir Starmer, David. Imagine me being in that hole that he's in with people wanting to talk about winter fuel payment removal and wanting to talk about freebies and you want to talk about policy. How can he get himself out of a hole like that, David? Do you fancy having a go at this one? I know that's not the reason you called.
Well, I can give you something quick on that if you wish, Don.
Please.
By the way, good morning.
Good morning to you.
I should have said it last time I spoke, but I got on my preamble, which I've got too much of a propensity to do, and once I get onto that, I take up all the time and nothing actually gets said of what I was supposed to say. This time we'll do better.
Yeah, let's try.
Okay. Let's try. Fingers crossed. Yeah, I've got a coffee beside me in case I start coughing.
Yeah. Okay, no problem. No problem, mate. Fingers crossed.
As I'm given to understand, Sunak put in place that as of April, the pensioners will get an £8 rise. Now, I don't know if that's weekly or bi-weekly because we get paid each second week, 2 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
My suggestion was that if, instead of actually giving us the 300, if he was actually to give us the 100 over 25 weeks, e.g. starting, say, mid-November or something like, and give us straight into our pension the roughly £4 a week, if it's £8, that's our understanding. Anyway. And as you get closer and closer to the April time when we should get the raise, it's actually, you'll notice that the amount that's actually been brought out of the coffer has been stretched out to such a degree that it's not so noticeable anymore. Is that making sense to you?
Yeah, it does make sense. Yeah, okay. So they're not going to give it to you in one lump sum. They're going to ease the deficit, if you like, by spreading it out over time, yeah?
Yes, and then a pensioner can say instead of saying, I'm not going to hate myself, they can say, well, I know it's cold at this point in the morning, I know it's cold at this point in the evening, I'm going to put the heating on for 2 hours of each of those.
Mm-hmm. Supposing it's freezing for 8 hours of the day?
Yes, but this is why people have been going out and getting blankets, and I personally use a sleeping bag.
Yeah, but it's not comfortable, is it? I mean, even, and I do that sometimes. You're not the only one. I'll walk around, ask my missus, you know, if you don't believe me, when she's next on, ask my missus, I'll walk around the house with overcoats. It does her in to see me walking with outside overcoats and on top of that blanket and a hot water bottle strapped to my waist. And, you know, because you can warm yourself up as much as you like, but if the atmosphere in your house is freezing, you're not comfortable, are you? You're not comfortable.
I'm afraid I am. I'm almost different.
Are you?
I can't help it. I was born that way. Okay. That's just because I'm 50% Irish. I don't know.
Okay, 50% Irish.
That's a good thing, by the way. What's very, the other, very good thing.
Oh, yeah, of course it is.
Because it makes you more open to possibilities.
Don't tell me the other 50% is Nigerian?
No, I'm afraid it, I can't offer that that particular group of people that that benefit.
Okay.
Of actually having a further
Let me have another guess.
Let
me have another guess. Can I have one more guess? Mm-hmm. What the other 50% is?
Well, you want to guess, or I tell you?
No, you've told me 50% is Irish, and I'm like, can I have another guess as to what the other 50% might be? Is the other 50% Tongan?
Now, that is an interesting one.
It would be, wouldn't it?
I think just to have that name would be wonderful.
Yeah. It's like, you've been Tongued. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
You've been Tongued. It would be like
I've been Tongued in cheek.
It would be like a new drink. You go, well, you've just been Tongued. Yeah,
The other 25% is from my grandfather, and that is pure London English.
Okay, yeah. So you've got 25%
left. My other grandfather came back from Canada.
Mm.
His father went there, who was Dutch.
Yeah.
Who then had a dalliance and eventual marriage with an indigenous Indian lady.
Yes, yes.
And that behest to a child who came over here and fought in the... He was married to my grandmother at earlier than the First World War. Unfortunately, he had bad shrapnel and eventually the flu took him. But basically, it means that of the other 25%, 12.5% is Dutch and 12.5% is indigenous American Plains Indian.
Okay. Yeah, I can hear that. I did ask the question.
If I'm a peculiar chap, I think I've got such an admixture that maybe has some kind of effect. I don't know.
Who knows
anything?
It may do. It may very well do, but basically, you're of mixed heritage, I think it's fair to say, yeah?
I'm very happy. I mean, somebody on Three Counties was saying about the ladies doing this nude calendar. And would any other fellas be interested? And I phoned in and said, yes, I'd be quite happy to do it. And my accoutrements would be a pitchfork and a rake.
Okay, I haven't heard anything about this. I would advise you to be careful of that pitchfork. What did you expect me to say?
I mean, you can have the legend make hay while the sun shines.
Yeah, you can do that as much as you like. Just be careful.
But, as far as dancing is concerned.
Ah, this is what we want to talk about, is it? Dancing.
See, I've managed to move on for once instead of getting tied up in I don't know what. And basically, nobody has ever taught me anything of dancing.
Oh.
And in 1974, we had a works party for the Easter. And that was my first date with my wife.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And
nobody had ever taught you to dance at this point. You didn't know.
Nothing. No teaching of whatever. And I was always too darn shy in any case. And it wasn't part of who I was as a person, so to speak.
I suppose. But you never danced with your pillow in your bedroom?
No.
Have you never danced with your pillow?
No. I think the most I ever did up to that point was a small attempt at the twist.
Oh, well, we can all do the twist, mate. Come on, baby, let's twist again. Come on, baby, like we did last summer.
Yeah. Let's twist again like we did last summer.
Let's twist again
like we did last year.
Do you remember when
things were really humming?
Yes.
Come on, let's twist again. Twisting time is here.
You go up and down and round you go again. Baby, 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 he love you so again. Something like that. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, what happened was it was old time dancing.
Yeah.
And basically, I had nothing available.
Okay.
But I just, okay, here I am. We're supposed to hold onto each other and dance. So basically, I pushed her around the floor in one way or another. And she didn't complain.
Old time dancing. So would you mind taking your partner for this waltz then?
That's it, and I knew that I was supposed to push the lady rather than the lady push me.
Hang on, that's not dancing. Dancing is not... Let's just start this all over again. Dancing is not pushing. You know that. You push a lady around the floor. You glide.
I'm not being literal. It's a case of the man walks forward and the lady walks back. More or less.
We're in more enlightened times now. So we try and see if the men can walk backwards, and it's not easy, is it? Particularly when they're wearing high heels, those men.
And then I learnt to dance by, instead of being shy, at my best friend's second wedding, I found that the answer was to close your eyes and shut everyone else out and just be yourself.
Yes.
And move.
That
to
is
the
a
music.
Good idea. The only problem with that is you bump into everybody else.
No. You only lift your feet up and down. You don't actually move around.
Oh. And what about everybody else?
You use every joint in your body to move as you feel the music.
Oh, don't get me wrong. You know, I can dance without moving. I mean, or literally moving imperceptible to the human eye, you'd have to use either slow motion camera. But that dance isn't allowed in civilized company.
Well, there we go, you know.
Yeah.
Each to his own and each to his capability.
Exactly. So, hang on. Just one question. Mm. You had your first date with your darling wife. Darling wife to be. And you'd never danced before?
No, not ever.
And she didn't abandon you on the dance floor?
No.
That's got to be love.
I think we were just amazed that we were together.
Yeah, well, so am I, you know, because where I came from, if you couldn't do the moves, you were going to be stuck on that dance floor on your own. And it was quite embarrassing, actually, particularly when they turned the lights back up. And all the sort of youngsters kind of like vanished, except for you, because you were the only one in the middle.
And my last thing to mention, by the way, is an interesting moment. Have you ever heard of a drag racer guy, very important in the thing in the 1960s and 70s, called Don Garlitz?
Ah. Mate, you know that tune... That tune that you danced to with your wife, forgive me, we'll come back to Don Garlitz in a moment.
Yes, yes, yes.
What was the tune that you danced to with your wife, do you remember?
No, we're talking 50 years ago.
It's got to be this one, then. It's got to be this. It's got to be. Please take your partners. We'll turn the lights down low.
The anniversary waltz.
Yeah, Tennessee, you know.
I was dancing with my darling to the Tennessee waltz when an old friend I happened to see.
Except you've got your eyes closed, haven't you, David?
I introduced
her. I have, actually. To my lovely it helps me concentrate.
And while they were dancing, my friend stole my sweetheart.
You see, the great thing about this Tennessee waltz is
I remember.
Yeah, you never forget it.
Of course not. No.
Not a dance.
No,
like
I
this
mean that is of my era or my era, one of the three.
Well, both. But I'll tell you what, you know, these dances in these days, you needed a chaperone, you know, because to make sure that you were dancing cheek to cheek. Mm. You know, that's the way you dance to this. Yeah, oh my goodness gracious.
I was going to say, Don Garlitz came over one time only, I think, in the 1970s.
Yeah.
To race at Santa Pod.
Okay, that was the Hot Rods track, wasn't it?
Santa you know drag Pod. Racing?
Drag racing,
that was drag racer.
Yeah, drag racing,
You know, it's just an enormously long thing with tiny little motorcycle wheels at the front and the enormous slicks on the back, which were almost as wide as a car.
Yeah, that was the fastest
well,
way.
They sort of give you that appearance. But the thing is, he was a man who invented the rear-engine dragster.
Ah, okay. He's a legend, then. He's a proper legend. Yeah, I always wished I had one of those dragsters, but just couldn't find a road to drive them on. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, David, thank you very much. Let's do it again, you know. And this one's for you. You know that. Well, Mel's with us in the Wirral. Hello, Mel.
I was enjoying that there,
so
Don.
Me too, me too. Until I started singing, I was enjoying it till I couldn't
flipping
help myself.
Very quickly, Don, can I just wish you a very, 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 very belated happy birthday? Because I haven't spoken to you since you... Yeah, well, that's how popular you are, you see.
I'm not sure about
and
that.
And great news about Nana. I'm so pleased about your godson.
Let's
that's great
so.
News.
Really
I mean, half the battle is the fact that they managed to find a kidney, which is
an exact
match, because otherwise it would have been loads of drugs and stuff.
Yeah, do you know?
So it's good news that I'm very pleased for
As and when he's really healthy. As and when he's really healthy. I'm going to get him on this
well,
programme.
Well, that's great, isn't it? I mean,
I'm going to get him on the
programme. We'd all like to live forever.
Program.
Well, I mean, some people wouldn't, but I mean, you try and...
You've got to live as far.
You know, I mean, you just don't appreciate the fact that when people... You know, are not well. You just don't think about what they go
granted,
through. And I mean,
you take it
for
granted.
Because my dad, bless him, he had bypass and all kinds, right? Royal Brompton as well, which was in London, good hospital.
Sure.
So there's that, Dutton. And can I quickly say, instead of Mr. Starmer coming on to things should only get better, or like they used to do, I think they should be playing Carol's song, I'm So Sorry.
I wish I had that at my fingertips.
Yeah,
actually.
Play him that song, I'm So Sorry.
The hook
every
to
time
it,
he says sorry.
The bit that people love is, stand up, stab, stand up, stand up, stab, stand up.
It's just a great song.
It's
number
really
one.
It is,
and her album was number one in 1981, and
it
a great photograph on the front of her sitting on the car.
Classic photograph,
classic, great photograph. And she was only 20 years of age, or 21 years of age. Not that you don't know, though, of course.
Yeah, of course I know.
I mean, teaching your granny to suck eggs, telling you that.
But the thing that I know most of all, none of those love songs were written about me.
No. Well, what I found interesting, quickly, Duncan, because I know you're coming up to the news, is the fact that Lovers Rock wasn't called Lovers Rock until there was a label called Lovers Rock
That's
in about
right.
1977.
That is very true. And
Dennis
Bovell.
And then
Bovell,
it was known as Lovers Rock. Anyway, the reason I phoned in, Duncan, I didn't know whether to phone in, because this is not a great story, but anyway, I used to do some voluntary work in West Kirby for the senior citizens. So they used to come in, I think it was once a month or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And this lady come in, play the piano, and they'd sing Elvis songs and that. And I'd sing a few songs with them and stuff like that, you know. And they'd had a good time. They'd have a coffee and something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it, you know, because there was some lovely people there, you know, and they were from local homes and stuff like that. So this lady says to me, she says, oh, she says, you've got quite a good voicemail, good tone. I said, well, thank you very much. You know, I mean, I said, thank you very much, very kind of you to say that. So a bit later on, I'm talking to the lady I've been working with for weeks, and she says, Mike, I think I've told you this story before. She says, my son is in a band. I said, oh, really? That's because I was getting into the electronic music then, you know, groups like Tubeway Army and Ultravox and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Because I'm a big electronic fan. I was getting into Newman and all that kind of
stuff. Gary Newman.
And anyway, so she says, my son is in a band. So I said, really? She said, yes. She said, you might not have heard of them. She said, what are they called? She said, but Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. Well, because they just brought out, I think it was Electricity.
Yeah.
And my kind of jaw just hit the floor, because, I mean, I loved OMD, and I still do like OMD, and they're still relevant now. But, I mean, you work with somebody, you know, for weeks and weeks or months, and they suddenly say that, you know, and you think to yourself, well, you know, I didn't know that, you know. So
was that, you said it's a jaw-dropping moment rather than a pinch-me moment.
Well, it was a pinch-me moment, yeah, because I was unaware, you know, that I was working with. I think it was Andy McCluskey's mum, actually, that was working with. But she
but
was
you
such
knew
a
you
nice...
weren't dreaming, did you? I mean, a jaw-dropping moment
wasn't.
Is
no,
that...
it wasn't, because it was,
whereas,
you know...
a pinch-me moment is kind of like... I must be dreaming. Let me pinch myself.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not a bad story. It's not a bad story. And it's a good one as well. Glad to hear that you're all good, though, Mr. Mel, on the Wirral. We miss you when you're not calling us. Thank you for the belated happy birthday wishes. It's about 9 years late by my watch, but never mind. 0808 590 9693 is my number if you'd like to join in the banter. We're waiting for you.
The voice of the UK
and the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 3 o'clock. This is Charlotte Simpson. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, will seek to brighten Labour's message when she gives a speech at the party's conference today. She'll promise a budget of real ambition and say her optimism for Britain is as strong as ever. There's continuing discontent about the decision to means test winter fuel payments, with a debate on the conference floor expected this afternoon. From the gathering in Liverpool, here's our political correspondent, Harry Farley.
Rachel Reeves will strike a marked shift in tone today from Labour's recent warnings about the state of the country. Writing in The Times ahead of her speech, she says she has never been more optimistic about our country's fortunes. As the party looks to move on from days of questions over donations and internal feuds, the Chancellor is expected to confirm a commissioner will investigate more than £600 million of COVID contracts awarded under the Conservatives. But there are also warnings of tough choices to come. One of those already made, the decision to cut the winter fuel allowance for most pensioners, is causing deep discontent among Labour's rank and file.
President Biden says the United States will do everything in its power to prevent a further escalation of conflict in the Middle East. Cross-border fire killed at least 3 people in Lebanon yesterday and forced thousands in northern Israel to seek shelter from incoming rockets. Our international editor, Jeremy Bowen, says the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, may resist US pressure.
I think he hears everything. It's a question of whether he agrees and whether he acts on that. And I think his record over the last year when it comes to advice from Joe Biden is that he's ignored it probably more often than he's accepted it in terms of the way that Israel wages its war.
Ukraine's President Zelensky has arrived in the US for talks about how he plans to end the war with Russia. He's expected to seek Joe Biden's permission to strike targets deeper inside Russia using Western-supplied long-range missiles. BBC News has learned that the number of times machetes, swords and so-called zombie knives have been logged by police has doubled over the last 5 years. 32 police forces in England and Wales released figures showing that large blades appeared in more than 14,000 logs last year, up from 7,000 in 2019.